Together, okay. Number one. Number one, I'm just going to translate it. It is a pit, in other words, a hole in the ground, which is made from cement, and in it you have the stock, the kosher water, which comes from the roof, right? And you see numbers, well, we'll get to it later on where, how it comes down. Or it can come from ice. Remember, we mentioned you can transport ice from place to place and use it for a mikveh. And he also says snow. So actually, you can't transport snow. So if you needed to have this, needed a mikveh in a hurry in the winter, you can get that 40 saw of rainwater just from taking enough snow and transporting it into your mikveh. Number two is the place where people actually toil. And there, the water comes in from the city water comes in through the faucet. Number three is the faucet by which you bring in the city water. So if it is made out of metal, then it's supposed to be three tefachim distant. Three tefachim is a tefach of the handbreadth. So it's about 12 inches distant, or 9 inches distant, from the mikveh itself, and from there it should come on a cement causeway. The reason is because metal is mekabel tumah. Metal is subject to tumah. It can become tumah. So therefore, one of many chumras we have by mikveh is that we don't want water to be taken directly from something which can become tumah and be put into a place where you're going to go to the mikveh.
What about the rain gutters?
Excuse me?
The rain gutters are metal, aren't
they? So the thing is like this. The rain gutters, nowadays, they make them PVC. They don't use any metal nowadays. In the old days, they relied on, they used metal. And the logic was that, well, it doesn't matter if it's metal because it's made, to begin with, to be connected to the ground. So therefore, something which is in the Kabbal Tumah, which can become tumah because of something which is made to be connected to the ground, it doesn't become a true vessel until it's connected to the ground, by which time it already lost its status of being suitable to become tumah because it is connected to the ground.
Does it become purified with the rainwater?
Excuse me?
Does it become purified with the rainwater?
What?
The metal rain
thing? No, it has to be immersed. It wouldn't work. It has to be immersed in and out.
Okay.
So the thing is, so faucet is considered, for reasons not 100% clear to me, I guess because it stops up the water, it's considered to be something which is mekabel tumah. Maybe part of the faucet, since it's disconnected, it would seem that it's connected to the ground also. I don't know exactly why we have this chumrah. Then you have number four, which is that's the cold water. Number four is the hot faucet, which brings water from the boiler. Number five is a hole which is a tefach wide. Like I said yesterday, it's like you can move your hand. What?
The fifth.
It's a little bit less than fifth actually, but about 4 inches. You can move your hand around like this, and there is the place where the water in the mikveh touches the water which is in the number one, which is called the rainwater. Number six is the pipe which brings the water from the roof to the number one, and also here, since in the old days they were made out of metal, the pipe is supposed to be 3 tefachim away from the mikveh itself. Again, this is a chumrah that you're not supposed to have something come into the mikveh directly from a kli, which is suitable to be mekabel tumah, even though it's not really mekabel tumah. Again, I'm not sure, it's a chumrah. Number seven is a, where is number seven? Oh yeah, it's a valve where you can fill, which you can close, if you're getting too much rainwater. And instead of going into the place where the rainwater is, it'll go out to the drain the other direction. Number eight is the drain which takes the water out when you want to clean the mikveh. So as I said, nowadays also they don't have drains in the mikveh because drains have potential to leak. So instead of making drains, nowadays they make new suction. Number nine is a plug of the drain, which closes the drain, so it shouldn't go out, nothing should go out, nothing should leak at the time that you go to the mikveh. And as you see at the bottom, he has in bold print, all the faucets and pipes are supposed to be made by the person who makes them on the with the condition that they're going to be embedded in the ground. So therefore, they never became a keli prior to their being put in the ground. So this is basically what we said yesterday, just to give a little bit of a diagram to demonstrate it. Are there any questions?
What's the chumrah?
Severity, stringency. There are a couple of things here. This is a very basic rule, so not too many stringencies here. But the couple of stringencies are that three tefachim, the 9 inches of cement under which the water should flow before it goes to the mikveh. And the other one, was there another one which was going on? I think that's the major chumrah here. That's the only stringency which he had. Other than that, everything is very basic. There is another type of mikveh which I should tell you about, which is called the mikveh of Zriya. This is called the mikveh hashaka. Hashaka is the same word in Hebrew as a kiss, the shikah. So that means where the two waters kiss each other, which they do through number 5. There's another way in which people make a mikveh, which is not as common, which is called Zriya. In a mikveh of Zriya, what happens is you run the city water through the rainwater. Literally, Zriya means to plant. So you run it through the rainwater, and as you run it through the rainwater, it itself gets the rule of the rainwater. So it's a little bit difficult. It's not done because it's a rough thing to do to make sure that you have enough rainwater in there all the time, because water constantly changes. So therefore, you have to have a constantly replenished supply of rainwater at the same time that you're causing the water from the city to go through that system to go into the mikveh. So this is usually what's done in mikveh hashaka, is generally speaking one which is made most commonly nowadays. And even this kind of mikveh is pretty cheap to build. If you actually, if you have a house, and you have the location, then to build the mikveh itself is not very expensive. You just have to have basically pour some concrete and put some faucets in the there and some PVC piping. I don't know.
A whole lot of concrete and really tight valves.
The leak doesn't. If it's a leak which is not discernible to the naked eye, it doesn't count.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a very small leak. It's not.
The mix that they built in Santa Barbara, they use like this thick of concrete at the bottom because they're afraid of leakage. The concrete is porous, and so you can get it seeping through. Unless you have a lot of concrete or something like that.
Well, maybe if it's economic.
Maybe it's like even more of a stringency.
I imagine so. I don't see what's necessary. Mm-hmm. Anyway, maybe it's gonna more economical that way. They lose less water. I don't know.
Or you could use a bathtub.
Yeah, of course you use a bathtub.
Without a drain, I mean.
Yeah. even if you have a drain, it's plugged up like he has here, then that's good. It was a big shiloh in the early day in Chicago. The question was asked in Chicago at the turn of the century, last century, whether that drain could be made out of metal, because the plug could be made out of metal, because then it's not connected. Because if you used to have, this is the old bathtubs, you have a ball, a chain, which connects the plug to the electrical to the side. Anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
A plug on a chain, which you then put manually into the drain pipe and take manually out of the drain pipe. So the question was, if you have a plug like that with a chain, is that considered to be a problem because it's makabel tuma, suitable to become tamei, or is it also considered to be something connected to the ground? So that actually was a big issue in America, they say Chicago, because the truth of it is in Chicago, I'm sure it was an issue other places. And then in the beginning of the 1900s, nowadays, as I said, they don't put any drains in the mikveh. As far as I know, no mikvehs have drains. Okay, and one other thing, again, as I said yesterday, if you were a lubavitcher, then you would find number 1 not next to number 2, but rather underneath number 2.
That'll be expensive.
What?
That'll be a lot more expensive.
Why?
You have to dig under it, all of it.
You have to dig more.
Yeah.
That's true.
One question. So if you're to use a bathtub, the bathtub would have to be connected to the ground, right? You can't have it portable on wheels or anything, right? It has to be, the mikveh has to be connected to the ground, right?
Right.
So how would you have to cement the bathtub into the dirt in order to actually have a real connection, or do you just dig a hole and pop it in?
But you can have the bathtub on the second floor as long as it's connected to the building.
But connected how? Like through bolts? Or
cement.
Cement. Yeah. So if it's cemented to the building, and the building is cemented to the ground.
That's good.
So you could have like a sunroof where the rain just falls in. Now can you have like chlorine tablets at the bottom of the mikveh for the rain to fall onto?
Yeah.
So you could actually just have a mikveh of pure rainwater and go in it and have it be clean as long as you have a tablets.
Only in California if you can consider such a thing.
Well, we have three tablets readily available.
Well, yeah, it's like a cold to go to a nickel like that most of the year.
Right.
So, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why
don't
they close California?
Yeah, maybe it's a California. But so that you know,
have a heated roof, so it's just
yeah, heated,
warmed up.
Well, so say you have like a hot tub on your your deck, so then not so sure. You know, I guess it'll work.
Well, what if you have like you have the tub right like this, and the bottom is connected, but on the side you have like flames hitting it, so that it heats it up from the outside.
On the outside of the pool.
Yeah, on the outside of the tub.
That'll be okay. Is that how hot tubs work? They use hot water.
No, hot tubs work because they suck the water out, they put it through a bunch of heat, and then put it back. So you can't do that with a mixer.
I can't do
that
with
it. Right.
Okay, so yeah, so it's very easy to start to mix on your roof. That's very simple. So that's what we did yesterday. So now let's go back to finish off this topic. Well, we didn't do it yesterday. We're almost finished today. So we did these out. Yes, we were talking, or the day before, actually, we were talking about the issue of Afrusha Meitua, which is on the fifth page of this handout. And the thing is, as we mentioned yesterday, that you are allowed to take corporal action to prevent your fellow Jew from doing an Avera, from committing transgression. If you take a look here on this page, in this paragraph over here, the last paragraph of the first column, it says, Mutar gadla hakos es chaveiro. You are also permitted to hit your friend today like the show in order to separate him from doing a transgressing a prohibition. The chayn amru, and so too they said for Eben Mirza, a slave who was who was a slave till Yovel, to the Jubilee year, until the 50th year, and he had his ear pierced because he refused to go free. Shemasa lo rabu shikwaknanis, whose master gave him a non-Jewish servant as, his consort. Yeah, Yovel, and Yovel comes. The rabu makhibu says that his master pleases him to leave. Veil lo tseh, and he doesn't want to leave. The chobu lo rabu and his master beats him in order to get him to leave the house. Vasa lo chabura, and he rules him. Shepatua, that you are exempt from paying because you were doing the right thing. You were pushing him over, you were trying to remove him from a situation in which he can no longer fight himself. And I said, Lotichu Koter Begoymer Lashu, do not take a ransom for self to return, which they got, they stopped, but Sorshu Lasha, don't take ransom for the person who returns. That Shalotichu Sorshum Mama, don't take any money for Lizette, as compensation for this individual, Sharok Sarah Shugla Kukuro wants to go back to his bad situation with Yos Evet, right? Or it means Ramisha Dino, somebody's supposed to return to his family, his Jewish family, Dino wrote that. Because now that he's a free man, after the years will come, however, also Shibonaz is no longer allowed to live with a non-Jewish servant. And therefore you are permitted to hit him and to separate him from his prohibition. Now, it's an important point here which you make, encyclopedia here, which is, it's only permitted to hit him. You're not mandated to hit him, right? Which is, why not? If you see somebody about to enter McDonald's, and you can't prevent him from committing the sin by any other way except for hitting him, it would seem that you should be mandated to don't beat him up, right? If he's not going to, if you can, right? Not going to beat you up. What?
The law fine would be going on.
Yeah, so but he says, if you read that here, it says about the Minchas Chena, that it's only permitted, it's not required. Who's required? Shafetim Levarim, Shafetim Lakuf, Shalom Lassos Isser. The only people who are required to hit people to prevent them from sinning is the court, right? The court, of course, has general jurisdiction over everything that goes on in the town, and therefore it should beat all the people who go to McDonald's to buy cheeseburgers. But a private individual is not required to do so, he only is allowed to do so. Yeah?
I have a question. If you can get one like yes or no answer. If I go, for example, into a big variety of people eating chametz, start kicking them.
Should is a very strong answer. You are allowed to go, Kayla. Okay, that's up to you.
So, no, I mean, in these
I wouldn't recommend unless you know there's drugs in there.
Of course, I don't know if you did that. You should have to the same situation. Whenever you see a person from India and another, you're right.
But if you see a spectator, if you're about to turn on a light switch on Shabbos, you can slap them and say, don't do that!
Yeah.
And then they'll do it anyway, and then you slap them out.
No, I don't Now slap them as punishment, only as preventive.
Only as preventive.
Right. Of course, if it's going to cause a greater chilul Hashem to slap him than not to slap him, so then it's probably not worthwhile slapping him as much as you're itching to do so.
Can't do anything.
It's not like that smoke on Shabbos. Like, I know if I need to slap a cigarette, I know if I hit him, they're just going to be smoking more cigarettes afterwards. They're going to be upset.
Of course, why would you hit them? Right.
I don't
want to hit them. Because one hit them. Yeah. But it doesn't achieve the purpose, so therefore it's counterproductive. Sorry about that. Why am I telling you this? Because this goes back to what we're talking about looking at somebody's diary. So there we said that you're not allowed to look at somebody's Aseilu Chorav, or Chaim Dovalevitz said, you're not allowed to look at somebody's diary if you just suspect that he's doing something wrong. Also he said you're not necessarily allowed to open correspondence of a person who you suspect is doing something bad. But if you know that they are doing something bad, and that they will continue to do something bad, then in order to prevent them from doing this bad thing, you should be allowed, logically, to open the diary and read it. Because if you're allowed to hit somebody and wound the person in order to separate them from doing a prohibition, and that, of course, is monetary damage as well. If you hit somebody and damage them, it's not just that you are a bad person, in this case a good person, but you also usually have to pay them for the damages you inflict. So therefore, afrusha misur, separating somebody else from a prohibition he's doing, is license, not to kill, but license to do all sorts of stuff. So Raja dictates it also gives you license to go and open a person's diary, read his email, open his correspondence in order to separate him or her from the prohibition they're transgressing.
Well, suppose you have a friend and you think that he has illegal stuff in his computer and in movies and things he should not have. Can you go, if you know that he has, can you go and erase everything? Or not?
They should erase everything. Reformat is dry.
Okay, but the question is not... Yeah, I don't know. The question is, for example, if he asked you whether you did it or not, because you can always deny. I mean, he can suspect that maybe it was a virus or whatever happened. If he asked you if you did, can you say no, or do you have to tell the truth and you need yourself?
Good question.
Because if you say, yes, I did, it's a big question.
It's a good question. You really should say that you did it, but if you think it's going to be counterproductive,
definitely.
If you say it, then you should try and weasel your way out of it. I mean, don't give a definite negative answer, but try and prepare, and what's the word we're learning,
work around it.
Work around it, right.
Yeah, but did you do it or not?
You really think that if you delete all that stuff that he's just not going
to
download
more? No, I mean, hey, but he has to go to the town and do it all over again. Maybe he's not...
Maybe he
deletes
it.
Maybe he deletes it. Does he have, like inappropriate stuff, or does he have, like, movies? Inappropriate stuff. A movie, maybe he's inappropriate stuff. I don't know. No, well, not all that. It's not inappropriate stuff.
Why is the movie not inappropriate stuff? Depends what movie it is.
If you're watching, like Mighty Ducks, for example, which is, like, a Jew-rated movie, and the guy has...
I see what it's talking about.
Oh, sure, I thought it was just talking about movies. Like, no, it's not about that. If the movie is illegal to possess the movie, I'm not thinking about possessing the movie. I'm thinking about the movie.
If it's illegal to possess the movie, then it's not clear that this is a really awesome topic. If it's illegal to possess the movie, somebody has a movie on his computer, so you can't erase it. Because he's doing something illegal, but you really can't report on him to the government. That's considered to be not a nice thing to do.
I can't do it, though, because that would be punishment. It's no longer prevented. Like, if he has a movie that's inappropriate, but it's legal for him to have it on the thing, I can delete it to prevent him from committing the error of watching it. But if he has a movie...
But he has that error by possessing it as well.
Right, but he's already stolen it. But he's already stole it.
Oh, I see.
So if we delete it, you're punishing him for stealing it rather than preventing him from watching it.
But
it wasn't a G-rated movie, but he stole it.
Wouldn't it be every time he watches it, he's putting his
phone down? No, he has the information on the computer, he stole it.
So then he's right, then he can't erase it because it's the act of that.
If it's appropriate. If it's inappropriate to watch it, then you could, because you can prevent him from watching it. But he already committed the act of stealing.
like an illegal
thing. So that you can't punish him. That's not your job. It's the court's job. It's only to prevent it. So actually, this is the official news story. We'll go to lots of stuff. If you know your friend had trace stuff in his refrigerator, so you could just go and
that was kind of a lot of problems.
And so on and so forth. Again, it won't always make religion look good if you go and do this. So
oh, that's true.
For example, you can watch a book if you raise everything, and he will not have any proof that, food disappears when stuff what somebody took is not food doesn't disappear by itself. But stuff which in a computer,
he knows how to use his computer. He can find out.
Yeah, but there's always that.
They can find out the time, the date, the user is, who is home.
Make sure you empty the recycling bin.
Hmm?
Make sure you empty the recycling bin. That doesn't do it. No,
you can still retrieve it. You have to permanently delete it for that unit.
Yeah, but you're not looking at
that. Writes a bunch of words.
I don't think people would like work to recover that.
I know people who would.
Right. And how much they need.
It's very easy to recover. It's one program. You can recover everything you deleted.
Okay, so in any event, so that's the issue of the Fushimi Sura, and that again should be something which overrides Kendra Abinagashim, and that's what Rav Chaim Gadol already said earlier. We said that last week sometime, which is even for those who hold that it's not okay to transgress Kendra Abinagashim in order to fulfill a mitzvah, it certainly is okay to transgress in order to prevent a sin from being committed. And that would be the case. Whereas, let's say, if you had a child who you thought was involved in some sort of improper relationship or improper activity, and you needed to open their diary or intercept their email, whatever the case may be, so that would be a legitimate reason to do so. Okay?
That holds for all of his desires?
All of his desires, yes. They want to lead you to an Aveira. Then it wouldn't be
far out, but on polygamy, if someone's married to someone and there's another girl who's also Jewish, and you know is about to have an affair with this girl, can you violate and perform a wedding for them to violate the gezera?
I'll tell you
why not. Committing adultery.
I'll tell you why not, because there is no, according to some folks, at least, according to Machbeth's dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid, whether there is a prohibition. A prohibition on living with a woman outside of wedlock. So there is a mitzvah to get married, right? So a person who doesn't get married to the woman with which he's living does not fulfill the positive command to start getting married.
Well, he doesn't commit adultery, right?
What? No, right. That's not part of adultery, right? That's not adultery.
No, but it's not adultery. You're married to a woman, and then he has a relationship with another woman.
Not adultery.
Jewish law is not adultery.
Right. But that's not adultery. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I'm not sure how to say it in English. He's mevatel the mitzvah, as I say. He's negating the positive command, which he could have fulfilled, which is like not wearing tzitzis, right? You don't wear tzitzis on a four-cornered garment, so you don't transgress anything. There's no prohibition to wear a four-cornered garment, per se. However, there is a mitzvah if you're wearing a four-cornered garment to put tzitzis on it. So there are some according to some later authorities who came up with this idea called an iser aseh, which means a prohibition which derives from a positive command. They came up with this idea that, well, if you wear a four-cornered garment and you don't put on tzitzis, it's not just that you are refraining from fulfilling the positive command of tzitzis, but you're also transgressing some sort of prohibition. It's not a negative prohibition, because the Torah never said, don't wear a garment which has four corners without tzitzis, but rather it is a transgression of the positive command to put tzitzis on your four-corner garment. But that is a relatively, in the past 500 years, a relatively new concept. The only thing the way it was understood, at least seems before that, was that there is a specific mitzvah, and you're not fulfilling that mitzvah. So same thing with somebody was living with a woman outside of wedlock, and she, again, she wasn't married, so then he wouldn't be transgressing anything, he wouldn't be fulfilling the positive command for getting married. So you, as an individual, are not allowed to compel him to fulfill the mitzvah of getting married.
Good.
You're only allowed to separate him from a prohibition.
But why to fulfill him then? Like, technically, you were to fulfill him to you know, because it's a good thing you're doing to get reward for it, but if you don't work the film, you're not actually transgressing anything. You're just not doing a positive
That's right.
That's the concept.
Right. So same idea. The thing is that it's a generally thing, and unfortunately, if a person lives with a woman outside of the bonds of marriage, usually they're not keeping the laws of Nida. And the laws of Nida
right.
are a transgression.
Right.
So you can beat them up on that premise.
Or make her marry.
Right. Well, marriage is not going to solve the Nida issue.
Yeah, because she's not Nida because she's probably not married yet, but once she gets married, then she'll start.
The mikvah?
Why would you still
there? Yeah.
She has a religious girl, let's say, in the religious environment. She hasn't gone to the mikvah because she's not married, and they're about to have adultery, so you force her to get married, so she'll could you force her to go to the mikvah then? If you knew they were going to commit adultery, could you force the girl to go to the mikvah?
Yeah, you could. you could push her into the river. Okay, so, But I just want to show you a couple of interesting truths on the last page, which is, we've gone over here mostly, but this paper, the Halachos Ketanos, was written by Reb Moshe Chagiz, who was a poseik in Yerushalayim in the end of the 17th, beginning of the 18th century. He was called Halachos Ketanos because every tshuva is very, very short. Almost every tshuva is very short. And he has a famous one-line tshuva, which somebody asked him, this is in the book, somebody asked him, when you get married, should you make the bracha shechayot? Right, because the special is serious. So should you make that bracha? So his answer was, you shouldn't ask me whether you have to make a shechayot when you get married, you should ask me if you have to make a bayan ha'emet when you get married. Bayan ha'emet is the bracha you make when somebody dies. So something bad happens. So that is, it's a halachic kind of outlook on marriage. Clearly, was not necessarily highly positive. But
you have to say that.
What?
He said you have to actually say yeah.
No.
Oh.
No, he said you got. He said, but your question is not right. Right, because you're assuming something which is not true. So, there's if you look on the right side of the page, on Kuf Ayin Gimel. It's in the second column, from the right, Kufanil, Sheila, the question. Somebody sends a letter in his friend's hand, Chatsum, and it's signed, with Pagim the Rachma, which we said means, Tori's Gevin, Shemir Nachash, Rabbeinu Gershom, somebody opens this letter, he breaks through the friend, and therefore he should be bitten by the snake, Rabbeinu Gershom. And that individual is afraid to yate the so-called Dovar Mediko that there's something in there which damages him. Remember, we spoke about this case. It says, Kayose by Me'agi, the cause of David Luria. The classic case of that is in Tanakh. King David, after he took Bathsheba to be, before he was allowed to marry her, so he then sent her husband subsequently into battle, to back to his base with a letter to Yoav, the general, saying that put this fellow on the front line in order that he should be killed. What? So the question is, if Uriah suspected, maybe he didn't, maybe he probably didn't suspect, but if Uriah suspected that this letter contained that kind of content, could he have read the letter to confirm his suspicion or not? So the Halacha of Ketana says, Tshuva, the response is, Nevochuzeh, this is an issue which is confusing. In other words, he doesn't have a clear answer. If he opens the letter, Mutal Becheren, then he's going to be in automatic excommunication. But if he takes it there, Shama Kosuv Alav Varma. Maybe Taka says something damages him. Lach zero the violin to give it back to the original sender. Then the original sender might send it to somebody else. So Emo Takana, he has no other option. El Poler Vizorik Layam is to shred it and cast it to the wind or make the Layam and toss it into the sea. A fascinating idea.
Don't read it, just destroy it.
What?
Don't read it, just destroy it.
Yeah, but then he's a Yeah, it's catch 22. That's what he's saying. He doesn't know what this. So he's saying that of all the options, this is the best option.
But then he's transgressing.
He's stealing.
Not going by the king's command, not following
the king's command. The king. It's the defendant.
No, I'm talking about the king's release case.
Oh, in Aaliyah's case, yeah. Oh, that case is catch 22, right? So if he goes to front lines, he dies, and if he rebels against the king, he dies. But the thing is like this, it's an interesting question. I don't think it's 100% clear that that's the case. Let's say you knew the king is wants to kill you. So you're now allowed to rebel against the king who wants to kill you because he's the king?
Right.
Yeah. No, I think you're allowed to save you. In other words, if you feel that for some reason the king is not justified in killing you, so you don't have to submit willingly to be executed just because he's the king.
Complete the kingdom, I guess.
Right, you can flee the kingdom, sure, right. Yeah, you can try and sort of use some other ways to get out of it. The other one I wanted to show you is the one at the bottom of on the left, where I've had my handwriting there, and
moon test.
What? A moon test? Yes. He says here that Shayla. The question is, Hamoti Geres Pesucha Beshuk. You find a letter open in the marketplace. The cost of a letter and it says upon it, Upagin Duragma, that formula, in Musa Kursa bin Chayab Abdir Bilat, we don't have to do it back. Shuvah, the response is, Nihito Gabi Makato, even though this would be the recipient, Ikula Meimar, one could say, came in the Nopo since he fell out of his hands. Well, Hashvan, he wasn't meticulous in safeguarding his, so maybe he doesn't care if you read it. Avo Sholeach, but the person who sent it, Shema Ein Rosa, Shedu Basoka, maybe that's why people can know about his business deals. Rufisa, therefore, in Yichasuma, if it's sealed, kosher can't change the Gabbah. You certainly shouldn't touch him, Chayav Lach Zira, and he is to give it back. The Mishdoma ain't Womar, since we found down the seals, it's unlikely to say, anyway, Shishligo Kren Shikrena, that he threw it out before he read it. So the odds are that he lost it, and maybe there's some negligence involved, but once we say that you cannot actually read it, because the Kren Rabbeinu does it still effect, so you have a mitzvah like any other lost object to return it to the individual from which it came. That's it. No, but the individual to which it was addressed, not the individual from which it came, the individual to which it was addressed. Okay, I think that's all for this topic for now, and we'll start Chelas next week. You can keep the mitzvah paper, but I want the other one back.